We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank.
Welcome to That Football Show. I'm Tucker Frederick, joined as always by Matt Verderam. Look, very excited. Last week we announced our show is sponsored by Ben Holiday Bottled and Bond Bourbon. You know I already got my bottle with me. I keep it by my desk. You never know when you're going to need it with the Ben Holiday Bottled and Bond Bourbon. We are here another week. Matt, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. We're 2 weeks from the NFL draft, which I know we're going to get to that here in a second, but 2 weeks, Motown. So looking forward to that, looking forward to the hype stopping and the actual draft happening.
Yeah, that'll be huge. That'll be a big day for us when we get to stop talking about the same thing over and over when the draft actually comes to Detroit, as you mentioned. I don't know if you saw this, Matt. Did you see the sign that Detroit put up? They said it was going to be a Hollywood. Oh, my gosh. They said they advertised this as like a Hollywood-style Detroit sign. It's not like that. I'll send it to you on Twitter so you can see it. But it's bad. It's a very bad sign. Very small, way too small for a sign for to welcome people into Detroit. And I think people posted like the renderings with it, and it doesn't look at all like the renderings.
So it's just like
a real shame.
Did Fanatics and MLB make this sign with a lettering way too small and it looks like crap?
Yes.
You know, which, by the way, this is completely off the beaten path, but I feel like it needs to be said. You know, only baseball would allow the company that produces their jerseys to do a really shitty job, and then for baseball to just be like, it's fine, we're just going to play with them. I mean, the jerseys, it looks like Little League. It looks absolutely ridiculous. And by the way, yeah, that sign in Detroit, that is brutal. That is so unfortunate. Move the letters closer and make them brighter. My God. And make them bigger. Like,
right.
Detroit's not exactly Hollywood. That's okay. You know what? It almost kind of fits Detroit. Like, they tried, but like, eh. But yeah, the baseball jerseys. First of all, the pants are see-through. Which not family friendly for the kids. And then on top of that, the lettering is ridiculous. It looks like one of those jerseys that's sponsored by like Myron Lumber when you played Little League. It's so embarrassing. And yet Manfred is just like, that's fine. Who's going to say, like, can you imagine the NFL doing that? The NFL, for all their awards, would have been like, that looks like crap. Do it again. Baseball's like that. Oh, listen, don't worry about it. We're not ordering another run of $50,000 worth of uniforms. We're good. That's neither here nor there. Detroit is a total failure of promotion there.
Very much. That's a very good metaphor, probably, is what that would be. I'm not polished up on my metaphor or similes. I don't think he used like or as, so I think that's a metaphor. I'll Google it after the show gets done and we can figure it out. But or let us know in a 5-star review. Make sure it's a 5-star review, though, when you leave it. But we do have a big show announcement. I know a lot of people have been clamoring for the show to be on video platforms. It will be on a video platform after the draft in May. So we will get through the draft It is about a time bandwidth constraint for myself. So that is why we're going to get through the draft. And then this show, that football show, will be on YouTube. Everyone can rejoice and stop asking us about it. That's going to be the best part of it, is we will get stopped being asked about it, Matt. But yeah, I'm super excited for it to go up on YouTube.
I am too. I actually kind of enjoy the people who have been like, hey, why isn't that football show on YouTube? And my answer has always been, hey, look, just, you know, the way it is right now, it's audio only. And I like the people who have been like, oh, well, then go F yourself. Or what the F? That's bullshit. I have appreciated all those. You know what? I like the passion. I like it.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't want these, like, the classic stereotypical Midwestern, like, oh, well, that's okay then. That's fine. I'm from the East Coast. I like the guy who's like, well, then you can just go F yourself. Okay, that's fine. I feel more at home with that guy. So, yes, I'm excited for it being on video. That'll be great. You know, now listen, the downside for everybody is you're going to have to see my face. Yes, you will get it on YouTube. And, yeah, it's a little more work for you. It's the exact same amount of work for me, so this is easy.
True. Yeah, so we'll see you guys in May. You will be able to see us in May, I should say. But Matt, let's dive into it. Let's get into it, because we're recording this on Thursday, and some news came out Wednesday night regarding the Rashee Rice situation. Yep. I think when we had recorded last week, had his lawyer spoke at that point? I can't remember. All these days kind of run together. I don't know if his lawyer had spoken yet. But it wasn't looking good for Rashee Rice, and it has obviously gotten worse for Rashee Rice, as there was an arrest warrant issued for his arrest, according to WFAA Dallas, in Dallas, Texas. 6 counts of collision involving bodily injury, 1 count of collision involving serious bodily injury, and 1 account of aggravated assault are according to the arrest warrant. Lots of charges coming down for Rashee Rice for his role in the multi-vehicle crash on March the 30th, Matt. Reaction to these charges brought down by the Dallas PD?
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be. I'm not, just off the cuff, I'm not surprised in the sense that 6 cars were involved. I mean, you're going to have a lot of counts and 6 cars are involved, and you and your buddy are directly responsible because you acted like morons and drove and turned your cars into human missiles on the freeway at 6:30 p.m. on a Saturday in a metro area. So there are going to be a lot of charges. Now, a couple of things I noticed that weren't involved in the charges. There's nothing about guns.
Yep.
There's nothing about drugs. There's nothing about alcohol. I would think that that would be a very positive thing for him. It feels like if there was any kind of under the influence, that would make this a whole hell of a lot worse than it even is. So there's nothing in those charges that suggest that there's an influence involved. Now, listen, we also know, let's keep this real, he fled the scene. So it's kind of impossible to know whether or not he was drunk or he wasn't. Whether he was high or he wasn't, how could you tell? How could you know? I guess, you know, based on the lack of a charge, that there was, I'm assuming there wasn't, you know, open container or stuff like that in the vehicle. So that is the one positive out of this. That all said, we know how the legal system works. Like, you would imagine here, we're probably looking at some kind of a plea deal. That's usually in life how these things shake out. The question becomes, what does that plea deal look like? I don't see this thing going, again, I'm not a lawyer. Based on everything you've ever known about the law and how it works, I don't think he's going to go to trial and face all 8 counts. I mean, my guess would be, look, you know that he's going to go to an arraignment, probably going to plead not guilty, and then you're going to go through this process. And his lawyer is going to talk to the district attorney and try to get this thing minimized. You know, all those charges you read, I believe, are felonies. And so I would imagine the goal here is going to be to plead these into some misdemeanors instead of jail. And from there, if that is the case, he's going to get suspended. The question is for how long. But I got to tell you, I have no sympathy for him. Like, no. Whatever comes his way here, that's fine. Because he could have killed somebody. Honestly, if you watch the video, it's a miracle he didn't kill somebody. So, including himself, for that matter.
Correct.
So, whatever happens here, whatever ends up happening legally, however long this is, like, I don't want to see one Chiefs fan, if he's suspended for 8 games, being like, that's too harsh. Like, no, hey, look, he deserves whatever he gets. And that's that. But yeah, look, it's not great facing 8 felony counts. It's not ideal. It's not an ideal way to go into the offseason.
Definitely not. According to WFAA over in Dallas, the collision involving injury carries a penalty of imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for not more than 5 years, or confinement in the county jail for not more than a year, a fine not to exceed $5,000, or both. Collision involving serious bodily injury is a third-degree felony. It carries a punishment of imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice system of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years. Aggravated assault, a second-degree felony, is punishable by two to 20 years in prison and a fine up to $10,000. As you mentioned, we'll see how that all shakes out. Lawyers will talk. They'll do their thing. I'm not going to act like I know what happens there. Right. Look, and if you want to know what happens there, like, Seth Kizer is a lawyer, and he will be on Only Weird Games, and he will talk about this from the law standpoint,
yeah.
Which, I mean, obviously very state to state from, like, what the charges are and everything like that. But we'll be really interested to see how this whole thing shakes out and how right. It does. But it does look like they more than likely will be without Rashee Rice for a number of games next year. I don't think that is... that is a stretch for us to say at that point. But a point to that you made, Matt, he did flee the scene. There's no fleeing the scene in the charges here. I thought that was interesting when I was reading through the charges. I thought for sure he was going to get tagged with fleeing the scene. He did not get tagged with that, which
I think a lot of this, and again, I'm not talking from the legal standpoint, because you're right, Seth, as much as he and I are good friends, I like to make fun of him every chance I get. Seth knows way more about all this than I could ever dream of.
Oh, yeah.
So listen to Seth about that. This is more kind of like a just common sense looking at it from a citizen's point of view. Look, I think a lot of how this plays out, you're going to come down to a few things. It's going to come down to how contrite is he? Like, that does matter. At the end, we're all human beings. If he's sitting there and he's like, look, I really effed up. I know it. I screwed up. I'm committed to doing whatever it takes to make this as right as I can. That does matter. Like, I think most people are more willing to work with you if you genuinely have contrition than if you're just like, yeah, whatever, let's just cut a deal and get moving. Like, I think that matters quite a bit. And I don't expect to hear from him or anything. I understand that a lot of times, you know, lawyers will advise you not to talk about it because things that you say can be held against you. All that stuff. I get that. I get publicly he can't really say much until this is all over with. But in terms of when he's talking with, when he's in the room with the DA, stuff like that, like he needs to really show genuine remorse. That's number one. Number two, to my knowledge, he does not have a criminal record to this point. That is something that I would imagine works in his favor. You can kind of say, hey, look, I made a really awful decision here, but I'm not somebody who has a pattern of doing awful things. I think that does, again, play in your favor if compared to somebody who has a laundry list of things in their background where they've acted the fool, and they've put people in harm's way. So, look, we'll see. Obviously, as you said, Seth would know a lot more of this from a legal standpoint. And also, too, like, some of this just comes down to chance. Who's the DA?
Yeah.
How willing, is the judge willing to accept the play? I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into this. Frankly, it's case by case. So we'll see. But whatever happens with Rashee Rice, I hope you learned his lesson. I also hope I don't have a chorus of Chiefs fans saying, it's two steps, 6 days. Like, look, don't be that guy. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's just hope that this thing, is resolved and that he really learns a lesson from it. And he's better for it. And if that comes out of this, well, then at least there's a positive that came out.
Let's look to some more a positive Chiefs news that came out on Friday evening, really. I was on the way to a family dinner, Matt, when this team drops Mike Dana's re-signing. So I'm glad that they think about us when they drop this news. Seemingly they don't like to do any sort of news during normal business hours, Matt. That's what I figured out about this team. They, outside of Irv Smith, they have not signed somebody inside normal business hours. Yeah, we needed that one.
That was everybody was clamoring for. Yeah.
Mike did on a 3-year, $24 million deal, $13 million guaranteed. It was an expected move, a needed move kind of at this point. Thoughts on Data coming back for 3 years, a 3-year deal for him?
I'll tell you the truth, man. I was surprised. Not because he's not worth it, but because usually at this point in the offseason, guys don't get 3-year deals. Usually it's 1-year deals, whether it's because the player wants to prove a deal so they can reset the market, or because the player, frankly, isn't good enough to warrant a multi-year deal. In this case, he ends up getting 3 and 24 and 13 guaranteed. So basically, it's like 2 years and a team option for a third. That was, you know, I think, look, the money is right where I thought it would be. I can't remember if I wrote this or said this at some point. I know I did one of the two. At the beginning of free agency, I was asked about him, and I said I thought he would get $8 million a year. Now, I thought it would be 216, maybe like 11 guaranteed, something in that range. So basically, he got what I thought he'd get. The difference was he just got it a lot later. I just didn't expect it to be a later on. And to be perfectly honest, at the beginning of the offseason, I didn't think it'd be Kansas City. I thought somebody else might come in and pay him. Instead, he goes back to the Chiefs. And listen, I think when you look at his numbers, he's done nothing but get better every year. He has had more tackles every year. He's had the sack numbers climb every year. Tackles for loss, quarterback hits, his snap counts. Like, every single thing has gone up. I was surprised, I don't know if you were or weren't, by this. He played more snaps last year than Omenihu, even after Omenihu came back from suspension.
Wow.
I did not expect to see that when I did the research. So, obviously, the first 6 games of the year, Omenihu was suspended. But right. Even after he came back, Dana outsnapped him. I was surprised by that. I would have thought Omenihu would have played more snaps. He didn't. So it goes to show you that it wasn't one of these deals that, oh, well, Dana played because Omenihu was on the sideline. Then once he came back, everything changed. No.
Right.
Even when Omenihu came back, Dana still played more.
They love him. I know that, like, that locker room loves him. The coaching staff loves him. We talked to Joe Cole, and I think it was, would have been not this combine, but the last combine following the first Super Bowl, we talked to him about, like, his room that he has in the defensive line, just, you know, from guys that could play inside, outside. Mike Dana obviously coming back, and he spoke very highly of Mike Dana, said he's a Swiss Army knife. He would love to have Mike Dana at every position. Then the team would be set, he said, if the team had a Mike Dana at every position. And I think that that's really important. That's a good point that you made. I didn't really think about that. He got what I think we all anticipated him to get, but it just happened way later than we all thought. And Nate Taylor did report that there were other teams in on him. I know some people were skeptical about that. Like, well, why is he signing with the Chiefs now if there were other teams in on him? Nate Taylor reported there were other teams on him. I do think the whole process is interesting. They really did need to bring him back when you started to look around that defensive end specifically. You're like, okay, Omenihu is going to be shelved for probably, let's say 6 weeks. Let's be kind. Let's say 6 weeks for Charles Omenihu, for his ACL. And then you're looking at FAU and George Karloftis being your starting ends. I mean, it gets a little shaky there without Mike Dana. Now you have Mike Dana in there. I think there's a little bit of a cushion there. I think Nate Taylor was explaining this for Felix to develop a little bit more. He's not thrust into the starting role all of a sudden. But I mean, obviously, you can never have too many pass rushers. You'd love the Chiefs to add one more. But I think that looking now, you feel a little bit more comfortable with that defensive line room heading into the draft.
Yeah, and I think that's key. Like, now you don't feel in the draft like maybe you have to take a pass rusher. You now are to a point where you've got all these guys, except for Menna, who locked up for at least the next 3 years. Karloftis, Dana, FAU, they're all there for 3 years. And Omenihu, who's there for the next year. You also have Chris Jones, who will flex outside on third downs. You have 5 guys who can rush the passer, and a lot of those guys can do it inside or outside. And then at the tackle, you're pretty set. You've got Pinnell and Wharton and Noddy rotating in alongside Jones. Like, you're 8 deep at this point. Like, you got your defensive line. You pretty much know that's one of the You can make an argument that's the deepest defensive line in football. And if it's not, it's damn close. I mean, how many other teams? You've got four legitimate pass rushers on that team that at any given time can make a play. That's a lot of guys. It doesn't sound like it. Go look at the depth charts around the NFL and tell me how many other teams have four guys who are capable of six-plus sacks. Not many. And Dev Tranquil, who's one of the better blitzing linebackers in the NFL, gets quite a few sacks himself. So, look, I think if you're the Chiefs, you don't have to even touch the front seven in the draft. You don't have to touch safety. Like, corner, receiver, tackle. Maybe you add a guard because Tooney is, a little older and Trey Smith is scheduled anyway in free agency. You add a running back. But, it's not – they don't have a lot of areas where you're like, yeah, a guy would really make an impact there. You know, it's just not that many guys. There really aren't.
Yeah, it's really funny, too, because every year we head up to St. Joe, right, man, and – the biggest conversations we're having are running back four. Are they going to carry a fourth running? Who's the sixth wide receiver they're going to put on? That is the big conversations we're having every year when it comes to this team's roster construction. My wide receiver might be a little bit more of a conversation. It's been a conversation for the last 4 years, pretty much. With the receiver situation, too, it might be more like escalated more.
Of course.
The Chiefs need to sign a veteran, another veteran, and draft a guy type of thing on top of Rashee Rice's situation. But you're right, their defense didn't change a whole lot, which is good because they were pretty damn good last year. They lose the best corner in football, but other than that, you feel pretty confident in the Chiefs and Brett Veach and the whole front office's ability to be able to scout and develop corners. I think you feel pretty okay about that at this point.
Yeah.
But they're in a good spot on defense.
I mean, two things. One that is a little bit of a sidetrack, but as people know who are familiar with me and my body of work, I guess I could say over the years, I'm a huge hockey fan, and I'm a New Jersey Devils fan, which has an ironic tie into Kansas City because they started as Kansas City Scouts. In fact, almost every team I've ever rooted for somehow is tied to Kansas City, which is bizarre. That's complete accident. That's right. The Devils, when I was a kid, won three Stanley Cups and went to four finals in 9 years. They were one of the pillars of the league at the time. I don't know, you want to call them a dynasty, cool. If not, fine. They were damn close. The Devils were amazing in the sense they could lose an all-star player, and it just didn't matter. They would bring in some guy from the concession stands, but you're going to play defense now. And that guy was just fine, solid as a rock for 82 games. They were amazing at doing that. They would always lose guys because back then the NHL didn't have a cap and they didn't spend as much money as their team. They'd lose guys, and they'd replace them with some random guy they got from, Sweden. And the guy would just come in, and it was like, that's fine. And my point is, it's not that, Jerry Sneed's a great player, and losing him stinks. I would be willing to bet firmly that, Jalen Watson will come in, and he'll just play really well. Because at some point, it's not just about the players, it's also about the system. And I think a lot of it with the Devils was they had a system, which, if you're a hockey fan, you're very well aware of, it's famous. They played the trap, where they knew exactly how they wanted to play. And you didn't have to be great in any other system. You had to be able to do what they needed you to do. They were unbelievable at that. They would find guys who anywhere else was just some guy, and then would go to Jersey, and it was perfect. It was that guy plays this scheme perfectly. The Chiefs, especially on defense, are also great at that. They find guys who it's like, hey, man, we like to play more man than a lot of teams, and we like to press, and we need you to be really good at that. We don't care if you're not great playing off-man coverage and playing a ton of zone. We'll help you in some of those regards with the way we scheme up things, but we need you to be physical at the line and be able to get your hands on a guy. They're great at finding guys. It's the same thing with Adana, right? Versatility. You can play inside. You can play outside. A Meta who does it. Jones does it. They're really, really good. Leo Chenal in some defenses, I don't know that he'd work out that well. But in the Chiefs defense, it's like, hey, Leo, we need you to do these three things really well. And if you can do that, we don't give a damn about anything else. blow up some plays against the run, be able to cover a little bit, and be able to blitz once in a while. And, like, if you can do that, we're good. We're good. Like, you don't have to do a whole bunch of other crap. That's why when I look at the Chiefs again, sucks at losing Snead, but I also look at them and go, yeah, all right, but, you know, they'll figure it out. And as far as training camp goes, it's actually funny. Last year in the summer for SI, of course it was in the summer, I went on training camp tour, and I went to 8 cities and saw 9 teams. The Lions and Giants had a joint practice. Mm-hmm. And the last one I went to was Kansas City. And it was so funny because every other camp, with the potential exception of Detroit, every team was like, yeah, we're trying to figure out who's starting here and who's starting here and who's doing this. I got to Kansas City, I was sitting there talking to Nate Taylor, and we were all laughing. So I'm like, bro, how do you cover this team day in and day out? Like, there's nothing to write about in training camp. Like, during the season, there's a ton to write about. They're great. That's all. During training camp, we were sitting there talking about, like, hey, you think Justin Ross makes the team? Like, what do you think? You think Nick Jones is going to make it, or is he going to go to the practice squad? Like, it was ridiculous. Every other place I'd been, I'm sitting there writing about these top line things. And I called my editor and I'm like, look, man, I'm going to write about Mahomes because there is nothing to write. Like, they know who their 53 are. Like, there's not certainly they know every single starter on the team is. There's not an ounce of intrigue in terms of, like, hey, who's winning this depth chart battle? So just keep in mind next year, or, you know, next year, 4 months from now, if you're sweating it out because you're like, maybe they're going to keep 7 receivers. Like, it's okay. That is the biggest first world problem in the world. Yes. If you're a football fan.
It is quite incredible. And we joke about it every year that we're talking about roster spots 50, 51, 52, and 53. It's like that's the biggest conversations every single year is who's going to the last. It's like the bubble. We're talking about the bubble for the NCAA tournaments, like last 4 in, first 4 out. Like, that is what we're talking about when it comes to this Chiefs roster.
And it's honestly, it's like, I love the passion of Chiefs fans because they'll sit there and yell at each other over, like, you're an idiot. They have to keep Blake Bell. And, like, it's back. And meanwhile, like, you have, like, half the league. Like, who's our quarterback? Covering it from a national perspective gives me more, I don't know, like, humor in it, I guess. Because you expand your zone. Like, I was at Bears camp. The Bears literally were trying to figure out who half the starters on the team were. You know? I mean, the Bengals, when I was there, they didn't have Joe Burrow. He wasn't healthy. So it was like they're trying to figure that out. The Browns, you know, they're trying to figure, can Deshaun Watson still throw a football? And, you know, they're trying to work in new coordinators, you know, or coordinator in Schwartz and stuff like that. Like, you know, on and on and on. The Colts had new coach, new quarterback. You know, the Vikings, there were a million questions on defense. The Packers, even though it worked out well for them, like, they were trying to figure out all kinds of things on offense around Jordan Love and trying to figure out Jordan Love. Like, so many questions. And then I got to Kansas City, and it was like, yeah, listen, we're pretty much good. You know, maybe we keep an extra receiver for the hell of it. I don't know. Let's see what happens. And going into this year, barring something shocking, you're pretty much in the same boat. Like, you're looking at the team going, all right, well, if Rashee Rice ends up, you know, being suspended for a handful of games, okay, you got to figure that out for a little bit. But then, like, Rashee Rice is going to be back if that's the case. I'm like, all right, do you know he's there? Like, you know who's starting on this team. I mean, maybe there's, like, some intrigue at left tackle. That's it. Everywhere else, you know who's starting. Like, right now, you know who's starting everywhere else. So, you know, good luck to those people out there who have got to come up with the 5 roster battles to watch in Kansas City. Have fun with that.
It's a yearly tradition unlike any other. Look, they'll probably just send Donovan Smith after the draft, and the conversation will be over with. But Matt, let's take a break. The draft, as you mentioned earlier in the show, coming up very quickly in 2 weeks. We're going to have some conversations about what we anticipate to see in the first round and maybe what we don't like about draft season. We'll talk to you on the other side.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Welcome back into That Football Show here on KC Sports Network, presented by our friends at Holiday Distillery with Ben Holiday, bottled in bond bourbon. Gotta go check it out. It's good stuff. Look, if you want to go to the distillery, we're having a party. We're putting on a party at the Holiday Distillery, our spring tailgate. Link in the description if you want to RSVP to attend. We're going to have food provided by Smoke and Magic. We're going to have games. It's just it's the Sunday after the draft. I should probably tell you when it is. Sunday, April 28th. Come up to Weston, Missouri, Holiday Distillery. We're going to be just celebrating KC sports. It's kind of the end of our season, right? I know that the football season ends, but as soon as the football season ends, we dive right into to draft stuff. And with the draft ending on that that Saturday, on Sunday, we will have a party at Holiday Distillery. So make sure to go check that out. If you haven't been to Holiday Distillery yet, this is a perfect time to do it. It's also a great time because we don't have like a watch party going on. So like we can come in and we can hang out with you guys and everything like that. A lot of times we invite you guys to like these draft watch parties or everything like that. We've got to be on camera, on stream, not for this one. So we are there to hang out with you guys. So make sure you hit the link in the description to RSVP to that. Very excited for that to come around. And the draft is always a big event for us here at KCSN, Matt. The draft guide is out. That's also a link in the description. You can go grab that draft guide. 306 pages of Chiefs-specific content. A ton of prospects. Over 300 prospects, I believe, in the draft guide as well, graded for them, too. So big time in Kansas City as the draft is 2 weeks away. But, Matt, there's something about this time of year that is just kind of wearing on. I know it wears on you as well, too. And maybe it's been expedited, this kind of fatigue with mock drafts because of these, like, simulators where everyone can do their own mock draft, right? I want to get your thoughts on this. I think I heard Nate Tice say this, where mock drafts are just fan fiction for football fans. That's all it is. It's just fan fiction for football fans. I'm just kind of getting a little tired of mock drafts.
I have a deep personal hatred of all things mock draft. I can't express how much I hate them. And part of the reason I hate them is because I have to write them. So I am aiming this at everyone out there listening right now who's like, man, I love a good mock draft. Because you keep clicking on them. We got to keep writing them. Okay? Next week, I got to write two of them. Now, I will tell you, over at Sports Illustrated, my editor, John Plume, hilarious guy, very nice guy. He has allowed me to do something that most people would not allow me to do, which is to completely make fun of the draft the mock draft, I should say. So I believe it's going on Tuesday. I have a regular mock draft. Don't miss it. It's the only one I'm doing. Okay? So there's going to be that coming out on Tuesday at SI.com. I'll tweet it out. Thursday, I think, is the date. I'm doing it. It's the second year in a row I've done it. So last year I went to my boss. I was like, look, I hate these things. Hate them. They're a waste of time and they're stupid. He's like, I totally agree with you, but we have to do them and we have to try to be accurate. I'm like, all right, fine. So then I went to him and said, look, I have another idea. I'll do a regular one. But even though I hate mock drafts, I'm going to offer my services to do a second one. And here's the idea. Every single pick has to be traded. All of them. And I'll use the draft trade chart. I'll make the trades work. Like we'll make this legitimate. But it's a mocking the mock drafts piece of work where I just sit there and I trade every single pick. If you read that, please do not be the guy who then emails me and is like, this is unrealistic. Yeah, no shit. It's unrealistic. That's the point. That's the whole damn point. Yes, it is unrealistic. I trade every pick because to me, that is still going to be as accurate as every other mock draft that we put out there. Look, I am not crapping on the guy who does this stuff for a living, like who's part of the real honest-to-God draft industry. The Mel Kipers of the world, the Daniel Jeremiahs, the Charles Davises, the people, the Dane Brugler, the people that put in the work. God bless. Okay, Eric Edholm, good friend of mine. Like, those people really do the work, and those people, like, their mock drafts, fine. I will live with those mocks. I respect those mocks. It is the guy who is just, who's me, okay? Who is a reporter and a writer, and my job is not to sit there and talk to the SMU AD in October. Like, hey, man, you got coming down the pipeline here. What are you thinking? What are you hearing from NFL? Like, I will talk to a handful of people around the NFL before I do the mock draft to get a sense of it. I will try to be accurate, but the idea that I'm a draft guru is hilarious. I am not a draft guru, I promise you. In fact, most of the time, the reason I go to the Senior Bowl, two-prong. One, talk to people in the league and get some sources out of it. And two, learn who half these guys are. Like, I know, have a draft guide here at KCSN. You should check that out. That is an amazing piece of work every year, and I'm not just saying it because I'm here now. I read that all the time. I read it last year, the year before that. It's awesome work. That's great stuff. But Joe Blow on Twitter, who's like, I went on Draft Tech, and I made a couple of trades, and then I drafted these eight guys. My God, who the hell cares? Who the hell cares? Anybody who posts those drafts, I'm muting you immediately during the draft season. Stop it. Stop it. That being said, listen, enjoy your, you know, your draft season. But that is my rant on how I feel about all these things.
It is funny. I do think, though, we can have, I think that there's a good correlation, maybe a causation, between people's expectations for how NFL teams draft and the rise in prominence of draft simulators. Because you can go on a draft simulator and you can pick this A-plus draft with names all up and down that are phenomenal prospects, and it looks like you just got away with the steal of the century. You're like, yeah, if the Chiefs do this, I'll be stoked. But then that doesn't happen because that is wildly unrealistic. And people see that, and they see maybe taking a D tackle in the second round, and you're like, what? In my simulator, I was able to get him here. And it's like, that's not how this works. And I think that there's a disconnect, too, on like how the draft actually works with these mock draft simulators. Look, I think they're a great tool. I think they're a good tool. I shout out my guy Denny at NFL Mock Draft Database. Met him a while, like 4 or 5 years ago, and we kind of talked through, and I kind of helped him get to where he was with the mock draft simulator he has now. And I think that it's a fun tool. It's a fun exercise.
Yes, it is a good.
But you shouldn't act like that you're the GM after you draft a guy.
Listen, simulate away. Go nuts. You know, screw the company you're working for out of money and sit there and work and simulate all day long. I'm not saying not to do that. I'm not saying don't sit down and scribble some notes. Hey, listen, be the fan you want to be. That's what you want to do. Have fun. But don't be the guy who posts 9 screenshots every day of like, Tell you what, got Ladd McConkey in the second round. Stop it. Stop it. Like, nobody cares. It's like, it's the same thing when people talk to you about their fantasy football team. Okay?
Exactly.
The same damn thing. The guy at the dinner party who finds out what I do for a living, and by the way, if it sounds like it's a personal story, it's because it is, and comes up to me and goes, listen,
who'd you take in the fifth round of a PPR keeper dynasty league, 12 team? Would you keep Nick Chubb or would you keep Justin Jefferson? Like, I don't care. I don't care who the hell you keep, don't keep, doesn't matter to me. I don't care at all. I also don't play fantasy football, so I really don't care. But even if I did, like I used to when I was in college, I don't care. It's the same type of thing, you know? Like, I just, look, the reality of the draft, and this is the other part of this, the reality of the draft is that most of these kids, they're not going to be of consequence in the NFL. They're just not. Like, at one point, I actually tried to do this when I was a fan side, but it became so much information that we just could not find any reasonable way to publish it. I sat down and did like 25 years, I think it was 20 or 25 years of draft data. And I tried to figure out, what are the odds of hitting on a guy who makes one Pro Bowl in the first round? The answer is 50% over those 20 years. Okay. And in the second round, it was like 20%. The third round, it was 10%. And after that, it was like 5%, 1%, 1%, like 0.1%. Okay. The point is, you're like, when you hear somebody on NFL Network or ESPN breathlessly tell you, hey, such and such team just solved their need at left tackle for the next 10 years. No, probably not. Probably not. Like, probably going to need to draft another one in 5 years. Like, that's what you're looking at. Like, maybe two of those five teams solved their need. Okay? Maybe three in a really good draft. Same thing through a quarterback. We're sitting here looking at Drake May and Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix. And guess what? Half those kids, not going to be good. It's just the way it is. Like, nothing against any of them. I'm not going to tell you, like, I mean, I'm picking which ones are going to be good. Historically speaking, half of them are going to be good. Remember when Trevor Lawrence came out? And then also it was like Trey Lance and Zach Wilson and the Jets were like, that's it. We did it. Found our guy. Joe Namath the sequel. Oops, not so much. And then Trey Lance, who the Niners gave up 3 first-round picks for, and in any other world, everybody would have been fired for making that big of an error, but they somehow found Brock Purdy as Mr. Irrelevant. Like, yeah, he can't play, right? I mean, you can go on down the line. So please, look, love the draft. Have fun with the draft. It is essential to building an NFL team. No question. It is way more important than free agency. But if you're the guy or the gal who's posting 9 screenshots of your mock draft and or after the draft being like, solve these 5 needs for the rest of the decade. Like, no, they probably didn't. Unless, of course, you're the Chiefs in that, what was it, the 2022 draft, in which case you're in on every single pick you had. Like, most of the time, look, your hit rate's going to be like 40, 50%. That's the way this thing works.
Do you think that kind of skewed the expectations for every draft class for Brett Veach, that 2022 class? Look, maybe a historic class at all time. When you go back and look at it, I'm not sure, like, other teams specifically, how well their draft classes go. But, like, you mentioned it. Every pick in there played, like, significant time their rookie year, which was, like, astounding. Do you think that has kind of skewed expectations a little bit in terms of Brett Veach's drafting? Because before that, like, look, big Brett Veach fan here, didn't necessarily hit a whole lot on the draft before that class.
So that's actually a really interesting point. I have a piece coming out tomorrow in which I detail. So I went back 5 years, the last 5 draft classes for every team. And I assigned points for, like, 1 point for every year one of those draft picks was a starter. And, you know, 5 points if the guy was a first-team All-Pro, 3 points if he was a second-team All-Pro. No points for being a Pro Bowler because at this point you and me are Pro Bowlers. And then I also went in and I said, like, look, I also want to look into it, though, like, how much did that translate to team success? So the teams got credit for, like, every, like, 1 point for every regular season win, 2 for a divisional win, 3 excuse me, two for a wild card win or a bye, three for a divisional, four for a conference title, and five for Super Bowl. Now, I don't think I'm breaking any news here. That piece is coming out tomorrow, and your Kansas City Chiefs are number one on that list, largely based on the fact they never lose a game. But if you go and you look, so Brett Veach, his first draft class was after Mahomes. It's 2018.
At 2018, right? Yeah.
2018's draft class is truly an atrocity. Breland Speaks, Derek Nnadi, Dorian O'Daniel, Armani Watts, Tremont Smith, Khalil McKenzie. They basically didn't draft anybody that year. The next year was, I would say, decent. They didn't have a first-round pick, but they still drafted Cole Hardman, Juan Thornhill, Kalen Saunders, Rashad Fenton, Darwin Thompson, Nick Allegretti. Like, that's a decent draft. It's not a bad draft. Then we start to get to the drafts where they really start cranking out the hits. Okay, CEH didn't work out, but Willie Gay Jr. and Snead and Dana, second round, fourth round, fifth round, solid draft. 2021, Bolton, Humphrey, Gray, Trey Smith, not bad. And then, of course, that 2022 draft, which is just insanity. And the last year's draft, we already know Rice and Connor can play. We'll see what happens with FAU in 1 year more. Point being, yeah, I think sometimes, yeah, maybe that draft class a little bit skewed people, but I think a lot of times what happens is people just buy into this narrative that, like, everybody's great all the time. No, everybody's not great. Like, everybody was a great college player. But the reality is, like, when you get into the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, especially the fourth on, you're taking flyers on guys who have clear and obvious flaws, who you're hoping you can coach out of those flaws. Like, you're not like, there's the rare guy who falls to that level of the draft, who you're just like, this guy's going to be great. Like, Trey Smith fell because he had health concerns, right? Like, that kid, otherwise, he would have probably been an early second-round pick. But it's stuff like that. Like, Lyle Collins fell really late in the draft, you know, for those, I forget what his concern was, but he was thought to be like a first-round pick. Yeah, I would tell most people, if you have seven picks in a draft and you find three good players, like, that's a good draft, man. Like, yeah, really happy with that. You know, that's the way this works.
I do think that that is good to have proper expectations heading into the draft, because that's how it should be. Three out of seven picks is a good hit rate. Like, look, you're not going to get a Trent McDuffie, a George Karloftis, a Brian Cook, Leo Chenault, Joshua Williams, Jalen Watson, Isaiah Pacheco, and Nazi Johnson drafts every year.
I mean,
like, they might have missed on, like, Kennard, he's not with the team anymore. He plays for Philly. Sky Moore, still up in the air. Didn't have a very good sophomore season. Like, but those are, like, the only two out of that class that had any questions.
They took, let's put Nazi Johnson aside for a moment because we don't know how he's going to turn out. Although he was impressing early in camp. Mm-hmm. They took Watson and Pacheco in the seventh round. Like, most teams, if you took those guys in the second round, you'd be like, that's good. That's solid. They took those guys in the seventh round. I mean, that. And by the way, though, that is where, in a lot of ways, this dynasty's been built. Like, late rounds. Okay? I mean, think about, forget first-round picks. Don't even include them.
Yep.
Their draft hauls have included Rashee Rice, Jamari Connor, as you just mentioned, Cook, Chenault, Williams, Watson, Pacheco, Bolton, Humphrey, Noah Gray, Trey Smith, Willie Gay, L'Jarius Sneed, Michael Dana, McCall Hardman, Juan Thornhill, Colin Saunders, Fenton, Allegretti, Derek Nnadi, Kareem Hunt, although you could argue he wasn't part of the dynasty, that's fine. Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill. They drafted Chris Jones and Tyreek Hill in the same year, and they didn't have a first-round pick. Like, that, I mean, you're talking about on and on and on. I mean, obviously, Kelsey was a third-round pick. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who started in the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl form, was a sixth-round pick. I mean, it's bonkers. How many? DeMarcus Robinson is a fourth-round pick.
Yep.
They found an ungodly amount of talent that didn't even include the only first-rounders who they took who were anybody in this dynasty before the Karloftis McDuffie year were Mahomes, obviously, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who most would argue, look, he was not a starter on any of these Super Bowl teams. Okay. Before McDuffie and Karloftis, the only first rounder they took who was worth anything to them winning a Super Bowl was obviously the most important guy, but Mahomes. That's it. That's it. And even FAU, like, look, we don't know what he's going to turn into, but last year was a bit player on the team. Like, they have largely built the team from day two on. That is bonkers to be able to do that over that course of time.
It is quite insane. I'll be interested to see what happens when the Chiefs come up on the clock at number 32. Look, it's also really hard to predict what the Chiefs are going to take because so many things have to happen before the Chiefs get their pick. So it's like, however the board falls, like, we could want them to take a wide receiver, but what if tackles fall? What if corners fall? You know, like, what if there's a really good value position? Trent McDuffie specifically, they were not planning on taking a quarterback in the first round, but Trent McDuffie fell so far, they're like, well, we have to. Like, we're going to go up because he's there. Like, we didn't anticipate him being there. There's a lot of situations that you don't see like that. And what I think is really interesting is when I head on over to our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook, they have, like, totals for however many quarterbacks, however many wide receivers. Those are the two numbers that I pulled. Will be taken in the first round. So, Matt, before we get out of here, I want to ask you kind of on these. They set the total quarterbacks in round one at 4.5.
Over.
4.5 quarterbacks. Over. The over is favored at -220 right now. So I wonder if that line moves before we get there.
I would hit that over so hard that I break my hand. Over. I think the first four picks in the draft are going to be quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And then
very likely.
Penix or Nix. Yeah, one of them. One of them will go out in the first round. I think, Mike, you mean, or both of them will go out in the first round. I've talked to people in the league who think quarterback, receiver, and tackle will be responsible for 20 picks in the first round.
Wow.
Five That's to six lot. Quarterbacks, and then at least a half dozen guys at each other position, and maybe seven at those positions. Yep. I mean, those three positions are going to dominate the first round. And so the question with the Chiefs is, like, do you move up at some point? And which position has the run first? I mean, excluding quarterback. Quarterback's going to be where a lot of these guys go wrong. But, like, receiver or tackle, which position sees the run first? My guess is tackle. That's my guess. Just based on team. I think you're going to see the three big receivers go early.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you're going to see Alt go in the top 10.
Yep.
And then I think in the teens, it's going to be a ton of tackles. And that's my question. If the Chiefs can get to, like, 22, 23, do they do it? That would be my question here.
Looking at the they don't have it breaking up on DraftKings Sportsbook, whether it's tackle or guard. They have offensive linemen.
Right.
In total, 9.5 is what they have at that number for offensive linemen.
That's high, because I'm trying to think, like, the interior lineman from Oregon, he'll be a first round pick.
Yes.
I'd probably take the slight under on that.
That has juice on it too. Like that under's at +140 is what that was. So you get a little bit of juice with that under.
Yeah, I think that's. I think you're at like 8 or 9, but. Again, I am not a gambling man here, but I'd say like 8 or 9. I don't think you're going to get the 10 in the first round.
Yeah, it would be a lot of offensive linemen, but wide receivers, that's at 6.5 over under.
That's probably the right number.
The over with some juice there, +140, 6.5 wide receivers for that. I think that's a really good line. Yeah. In terms of where it's at, I think it'll be right there. But I think I'd probably go with the under there. I think it'd be 6. I don't know if it'll be 7 taken.
Yeah, because you got the top 3. You got Brian Thomas Jr. You have Xavier Worthy, who I think will all go in the first round.
Yep.
And then it's like, you have Mitchell out of Texas. Does he go in the first? Does McConkey go in the first?
Yeah.
Leggett, does he go in the first? If I had to guess, I would take the under as well. But that's close.
Like, yeah.
I could easily see it being 7.
Oh, for sure. Especially if there is that run that you mentioned. If there is that run on wide receivers and somebody wants to, I think that's kind of what I think about with quarterbacks too. If there's a quarterback that's sitting at 32, right? Like say Bo Nix or Penix, they're both sitting at, or one of them is sitting at 32. A team wants to take him in the first round. They want that extra year option on him. Chiefs should trade out. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think they could get some pretty decent offers, especially if there are quarterbacks sitting there that people do want like that. I think that it could be a really interesting opportunity for the Chiefs. I mean, they're not having to take a pick at their own stadium or at their own in their own city with their Super Bowl trophies out. So I think they could feel a little bit more comfortable trading out in the first round. Maybe not. It might not make us very stoked if we're alive the whole day. Then they trade out. Like, that won't be pretty cool. But I would definitely understand it if they do trade out. But I mean, with so many scenarios, the KC Lab just talked about this with trading up, trading out, what they do with the first round pick. I think it's more likely that they just kind of stay put and just kind of let the board fall to them.
Yeah, they might. They might. I mean, Brett's kind of unpredictable because there have been years where they've made moves, and I can tell you. And it didn't end up coming to this. This would be a fun note to close it out on. I remember talking to people around the Chiefs years ago, a handful of years ago, just about Mahomes and the process of moving up in the draft to get him. And, of course, Brett wasn't the GM at the time. He was, you know, one of the top front office guys under John Dorsey.
Mm-hmm.
They moved from 27 to 10 to get Mahomes. I was told that they were trying to get the 5 because they were so nervous that he was going to go off the board. I believe 5 was Tennessee. I'd have to double check that. I believe they were 5th. The Chiefs were calling everybody from like 5 on trying to get up there because they were so freaked out that he was going to go off the board before they could get to him. So like the aggression is in their bones. Like if there's some guy, like hell, they trade up for McDuffie. Not
Dixon,
of course, Mahomes. But, like, let's say they love Brian Thomas Jr. Let's just say they love him. And he's there at 21. You know who else might trade up for Brian Thomas? Buffalo. I could see the Chiefs being like, you know what? Looks like it's time to shine and just moving up. I mean, they did that with Buffalo with McDuffie.
Yeah.
And Buffalo won and they ended up taking Kyrie Elam. Like, how different is the AFC if that gets you first? Okay. Like, maybe Josh Allen has a ring right now. So, I know that sounds like I'm being funny. I'm dead serious. That is part of the equation if you're the Chiefs. Like, you keep him away from another team and you get him. Yeah. I mean, is that worth, you know, a future fifth rounder as a sweetener? Yeah, probably is. If you really believe in the kid, yeah, probably is. Right? I mean, think about it from this perspective. Let's say Brian Thomas Jr. becomes an elite player. And you find out years down the road, yeah, you know, the Chiefs didn't make that move because they didn't want to give him a future fifth, and he ended up in Buffalo. You'd be like, oh, my God, give him the fifth. Like, think about it that way.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it. I always say with the Chiefs, at this point in their maturation, this point in their dynasty, look, you don't need 7 or 8 draft tickets here. You don't need a bunch of lotto tickets. You need 2 or 3 guys who really make an impact. That's what you need. They've drafted so well, they can't even keep all their good players. Like, you might as well, if there's a guy that you're just in love with, and that means giving up your 4th round, fine, do it. Right. You know, I don't have any issue with them being aggressive in the draft.
I think people have an attachment to, in some exercises we've done, the KC Lab traded up for Brian Thomas Jr. In their recent mock draft that they did, and they gave up pick 95. And so people have attachment to pick 95 as a 3rd-round pick, as seeing it as another value to bring in a guy that can be a potential starter. And I understand that, but, like, if you're really like a Brian Thomas Jr.
Do it.
I don't do it. Yeah, that's the thing. I would rather them have less picks, more impact, than more picks and less impact.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But you were right. I did look it up. Tennessee was at 5. They took Corey Davis, no longer in the league. But,
God, Tennessee should have taken the deal.
They should have taken the deal. There's 2 people in the top 10 of that draft class that are no longer in the league. It is Corey Davis and John Ross.
There you go. And Corey Davis, to his credit, was a good receiver at one time.
Phenomenal.
John Ross just could never stay healthy, which is the same reason that people were worried about him coming out of college. Yes, the Bengals could have taken Patrick Mahomes and took John Ross. And then the Bills could have taken Patrick Mahomes and traded the pick. And I know, you know, Bengals and Bills fans, well, we got our guy. That's fine. They're great. They're not Patrick Mahomes. The Chargers also drafted ahead of the Chiefs that year and took Mike Williams.
Yep.
And the Jags could have taken Mahomes and took Leonard Fournette. Now, I will be fair. You know, I live outside Chicago. So many Bears fans come up to me, they know what I do, and they know I'm a Chief, and like, hey, we screwed up, man. I should take him home. So it's like, yeah, in hindsight, of course. But like, nobody thought he was worth the second overall pick. Like, there were a lot of people killing the Chiefs for taking him 10. Like, you know, that's, hindsight's a fun thing to have when you're like, hey, you know what? You know, I knew. No, you didn't. So, like, you know, it. The reality is nobody thought he was going to be what he is. Nobody. It's not like he was some number one overall pick that slid here, like, because of some concern. Like Dan Marino did years ago in 83, where, like, it was like, yeah, he should be a top 10 pick. He ended up going, like, 28. 27th, rather. Mahomes was a guy, I remember reading draft grades the next day, and people were just like some people liked it, but a lot of people were like giving them Fs. Like, how could you trade up for this guy? He's so undisciplined, all the rest of it. So, yeah, that being said, I do remember talking to people who said, yeah, the Chiefs were like willing to trade up to any spot, five or beyond, to try to get.
Well, it worked out, and hopefully they have another draft that works out as well, too. We'll be back next week with the another episode, another edition of that football show here on KC Sports Network. Thank you to our sponsor, Holiday Distillery and Ben Holiday, Bottled and Bombed Bourbon. Make sure to go check them out. Also, check the links in the description for the KCSN Draft Guide for our spring tailgate party that we are holding out there as well. So for Matt Verderam, I'm Tucker Frank. We will talk to you guys next week. We'll see you then.